Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for you. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press for today, Bryson Rash.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. 3 weeks ago today, an American U-2 jet plane was brought down deep inside the Soviet Union. Premier Khrushchev made the startling announcement in a few days that this plane was on a spy mission. The United States government, some days later, finally admitted the charge. Now, in a complete or feigned or real rage, Khrushchev seized upon this particular incident to insult and also humiliate the president of the United States. The Paris summit conference was wrecked. In the process, the background and practice of espionage became a subject of intense discussion. Our guest today is thoroughly familiar with espionage from the Soviet Union side of the Iron Curtain. He is Alexander Kazhnichev, born in Moscow 28 years ago. He became a specialist in Eastern affairs and was assigned to the Soviet embassy in Rangoon, Burma. He was recruited as an agent of the Soviet intelligence service and worked in the communist espionage system in Southeast Asia. 8 years of hostility to the communist regime in Moscow culminated in June of 1959 when Mr. Kazhnichev defected to the West and sought asylum in the United States, where he now makes his home as a private citizen. And seated around the press table to question our guest today are Mr. Ernest K. Lindley of Newsweek magazine, Mr. Harry Schwartz of the New York Times, Mr. Fletcher Knebel of the Coles Publications, Mr. Herb Kaplow of NBC News. Mr. Lawrence Spivak, a regular member of the Meet the Press panel, will be back with us 2 weeks from today. And now we will start the questions with Mr. Kaplow.
Mr. Kazhnichev, in describing the activities of Soviet intelligence agents in Rangoon, Burma, you said or wrote somewhere rather recently that one of the main functions was to penetrate and find out precisely what was going on in the foreign embassies in Rangoon, especially the American embassy. Did the Soviet agents find much out?
In Rangoon, no. At the time when I was working in the Soviet embassy as a diplomat and as an agent of the Soviet intelligence service, there were constant flow of orders to increase activity on penetration of foreign embassies. And the American embassy was appointed to be the primary target. Several times I was summoned to the chief of intelligence group and given orders to look around city in all possible places where foreigners meet, such as swimming pools, chess clubs, horse races, dancings, restaurants, in order to get acquainted with any American from the American embassy. I was quite busy with fulfilling more or less technical job, translation of Burmese secret documents obtained by Soviet agents. I translated them from Burmese into Russian. So I was not so much pressed with that area, and it was not my primary duty.
Well, what about other Soviet intelligence agents?
But my co-worker, to some extent my superior in the intelligence organization, Mr. Galashin, was primarily interested in penetrating foreign embassies. Mr. Galashin constantly During working day and in evenings, was visiting all these establishments and places of common normal entertainment. But I found out from talks with him that his work was not successful.
Mr. Knabel?
Mr. Kazhnichev, I understand that last fall, after the Khrushchev and Eisenhower exchange of visits were settled upon, you predicted then that you doubted that Ike would ever go to Russia because Khrushchev would find some reason to cancel the visit. Is that true? And if so, what was your reasoning?
Well, yes. It's completely logical doubt. Definitely, the Soviet government, the Communist Party, in other words, Soviet Communist regime, in no way are interested in allowing so popular man as the American president to come into the Soviet Union. I'm going to say that there are several factors that constitute the stability and strength of the communist regime inside the Soviet Union. The first factor is the Cold War, the international tension, and the armaments race. The second factor is successes of communism, international communism abroad, and success of Soviet foreign policy. And the third factor, and I think the primary and above all, it is the ignorance of the Soviet, entire Soviet people of reality, life abroad, of real reasons of the international tension, Cold War and arms race. This ignorance created by two kinds of iron curtain. The first iron curtain is the physical, all of you know about, and the second iron curtain, I'm going to say, is inside the brains of majority of Soviet people, created by constant propaganda and ideological indoctrination. The Soviet government in no way can be interested in bringing, in allowing foreign guests, especially so prominent as American president, to bring some light into this ignorance, and in this way undermining. They were definitely afraid of impact such visit can make on the Soviet people.
Mr. Schwartz.
Mr. Kazhnichev, I noticed that in some of the testimony you've given before congressional committees, you've referred to the activity as intelligence agents of other Soviet diplomats in Rangoon beside yourself and of representatives of the TASS, the Soviet news agency. This suggests that, in effect, any Soviet citizen abroad, regardless of his mission, may actually be an espionage agent rather than being what his nominal duties would seem to make him. Is that correct, sir?
Oh, yes, it's very correct. The Soviet embassy in Rangoon, I mean the political section, consists of 20 so-called diplomats. You'll be surprised that only three of them are really people that make diplomatic work. 17 are members, very high-class intelligence officers of different intelligence groups.
Well, then, what would you think is the situation here in the United States, where we have a much larger Soviet embassy staff, and we have a certain number of Soviet correspondents and other Soviet citizens here on nominally business functions? What would be your guess about the status here?
I think that the situation, as it was in Rangoon, is everywhere, especially in the United States, that the Soviet government considered to be the enemy number one.
Would any Soviet citizen stationed in the United States have the right to refuse assignment to intelligence duties if requested to perform them by the appropriate officials in Moscow?
Well, it's practically impossible. I can recall the performance of my recruitment. I was called by First Secretary of the Soviet Embassy to another man while I was in Moscow, and I was told that I was in a position to help state, to help the Soviet Communist Party, to help the cause of communism. If I refuse to do it, definitely I put myself in position of being anti-communist, being anti-Soviet. I don't know what reprisal can be, could be, but I can guess that I immediately will be discharged from all my posts and deported in some remote place.
Well, Mr. Kazantsev, just one last point. Then would you consider it to be a very good possibility that in the case of any Soviet citizen one meets in the United States that that the probability is fairly good that he has some intelligent functions, although this may not be true of all of them?
You know, there is a peculiar thing about Soviet agents. Normally, technical personnel in Soviet embassies and those that are primary assigned to fulfill diplomatic, to make diplomatic work, are subjected to very strict discipline. They are kept inside embassies. They are prohibited from visiting cinemas, restaurants, nightclubs. If you meet such a man socially, maybe on reception, and invite him, for instance, to your home, he'll show some embarrassment and definitely refuse. At the same time, if you meet a Soviet and invite him to your home or try to make a conversation with him, and he'll respond very freely and immediately agree to visit you, to visit your home, to meet you any place and to go to follow any place, to cinema, theater, or nightclub. Definitely, this is the Soviet agent.
Mr. Lindley?
Mr. Kazantsev, why, in your judgment, did Khrushchev wreck the summit conference?
I think that the main reason of that change in the Soviet policy lies inside the Soviet Union. 1 year ago, approximately 1 year ago, I came here, and I was telling to representatives, to American officials, that the situation in the Soviet Union was somewhat very abnormal. You know, after death of Stalin, there was a period of de-Stalinization, democratization, liberalization. That period, that the process of de-Stalinization brought some results. Nowadays, people demand and impatiently demand further improvement of their lives, material, further broadening of their freedoms and rights. Personal and political, on one side. On the other side, Khrushchev's reorganization of industry and the agriculture was only half step. Instead of bringing some improvement, they created bigger difficulties. The second step is needed. The second half should be fulfilled. Approximately in 1956, 1957, that period of de-Stalinization stopped. And after that, Khrushchev showed an ability to go further. He repeated one and the same. At the same time, tension was growing. I was completely sure that in 1959, the Soviet government was facing very big crisis inside the Soviet Union. There was urgent necessity to do something, either to go further in liberalization, democratization, further reorganize Soviet economy or try to return to old methods of Stalin. Khrushchev's visit to the United States and all this play with the Camp David spirit and the relaxation of the international tension. I understood that attempt as an attempt of Khrushchev to go further, but definitely results of all this relaxation were so grave to the Soviet government that other side, reactionary side, Stalinist, start getting strength inside the ruling class. The most dangerous for the Soviet communist regime, I could found out from reading Soviet press and having my former knowledge, is that they start losing control over economic developments in Soviet Union, and the most important, over brains, over minds of the Soviet people.
Well, you don't think it was the shooting down of the U-2 that caused Mr. Khrushchev to change his mind about the summit conference?
No, I don't think so. There were, in late 1959 and early 1960, there were many signs, many actions of the Soviet government that showed that they are going to harden to tighten their policy, inside policy, and consequently to harden their policy outside, foreign policy. For instance, U-2 plane was grounded or shot down, a Soviet claim, on the 1st of May, but on the same day there was a military parade, strikingly different from the military parade held in 7th of November. Besides Soviet military parades on such holidays as the 1st May and the October Revolution holidays are somewhat symbolic, they signify the trend in the Soviet foreign policy. There was a Soviet military parade on 7th of November was a peaceful military parade. There were very little amount and all types of weapon. It was stress was put on a peaceful demonstration. First May parade was very surprisingly military as for amount and type of weapons. They demonstrated new kinds of weapon, and practically in several years this was the most military parade. It was demonstration of strength.
Well, Mr. Kazhnichayev, after wrecking the summit conference, Mr. Khrushchev went to Berlin, and he said there that there would be no change in the status of Berlin so far as the Soviets were concerned during the next 6 or 8 months until there could be another summit conference. And he also said that the Soviet Union would not engage in any adventures. Do you think he's really going to be tough in the next few months? Or is he going to try to quiet things down again after this performance in Paris?
I think that, honestly think that the Soviet government and Khrushchev's group in the ruling class are not interested or still afraid to start the Second World War, Third World War, excuse me. They know consequences of this. They are interested in reviving international tension, keeping a Cold War and arms race. This is one of the main bases of their stability inside the Soviet Union.
What effect on the Soviet people and their attitude toward Americans do you think the U-2 incident may have?
I think that the public opinion in the Soviet Union is more favorable to Americans nowadays than in many neutral countries and even countries very friendly to the United States, because the Soviet people knows Khrushchev much better than people outside.
Mr. Kaplan?
Do you think that the Soviet Union has engaged in any aerial, high-altitude aerial activity as represented by the U-2? Do you know?
I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this then. On the basis of your experiences in Rangoon, you said that the Chinese Communist Intelligence Service worked with the Soviet Intelligence Service. Do you know, are there any occasions where the Chinese Communists were spying on the Russians and the Russians were spying on the Chinese Communists?
I know one thing, that the most prominent Soviet spies in Rangoon were very well acquainted with the Chinese language and the Chinese affairs. Actually, they came to Rangoon after serving several years in China. At first it was quite strange to me, but then I found explanation. Several of my friends, acquaintances, were working formerly in the Soviet embassy in Pekin, and they told that the situation in the Soviet embassy in Pekin is practically the same as in other Soviet embassy in normal capitalist countries, in enemy capitalist countries. That majority of diplomats are professional spies.
Trying to find out what's going on in the Chinese communist regime.
That plus to this, conditions for work in communist China are much, much more difficult than, for instance, in the United States. Oh, this small brother knows big brother.
Well, were the Chinese communists trying to find out what the Russians were doing?
I think it's just the same. Besides, I studied in a very closed, very privileged institute in the Soviet Union, Institute of International Relations, where was a big group of Chinese students. I remember that they were subjected to extremely hard discipline. They were prohibited visiting Soviet families and meeting Soviet socially.
Mr. Knievel?
Mr. Kazmierczev, returning to Mr. Lindley's first question, do you believe that this tendency to increase international tension is a unanimous feeling in the Kremlin, or are there disputes about it? If so, what personalities are both sides headed up in?
I think that the situation that regime, the ruling class as the whole, is facing in the Soviet Union is very alarming to them. And recently, voices that demand hardening of Soviet internal policy, and in the same way, hardening of Soviet foreign policy, became stronger and stronger. More or less, I never worked in Kremlin and in very high places, but as an average Soviet, average former Soviet, I can understand that the whole ruling class consists more or less of divided in three groups. Khrushchev somewhere in the middle. There is a group of moderates, people that are willing to follow the route of further liberalization and democratization, and in this way saving positions of regime. And there is a big group, or another group, opposition from right to Khrushchev, that demand return to Stalin's method, tightening policy.
Short question, Mr. Schwartz.
Yes, I just wondered, Mr. Kazmierczev, you were born in 1932. You were born and raised under the Soviet regime. until comparatively recently. How did a person like yourself, who would originally know nothing but Soviet reality, come to reject that reality and then to defect? The mental process.
My mental process was very complicated and long. I was abroad last to this. But I think I replied to your question in other way. I am going to bring to your attention a fact very little known in the West. It is the new Soviet generation, generation of Soviet youth. This is people born in 30s. They are strikingly different from elder generations, from generations of our fathers and generation of our brothers.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Kosnichev, but our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Alexander Kosnichev, former Soviet intelligence agent, and the members of the Meet the Press panel for an enlightening half hour. Our panelists were Ernest K. Lindley of Newsweek, Harry Schwartz of the New York Times, Fletcher Knievel of the Coles Publications, and Herb Kaplow of NBC News. Meet the Press is produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. And now, a personal word here from Radio Central, if we may. Do you have a hardcover edition of any of the works of Mark Twain or James Fenimore Cooper or Ernest Hemingway? Or do you have in your personal library a recent American history or geography or a modern English grammar or a language study text? Or any hardcover edition, not paperback, but hardcover edition of any American classic of today or yesterday, if you have any of these books, we strongly urge you to contribute them to Books from America. The address is Box 1960, 1960, Washington 13, D.C. We'll repeat that address in a moment, and incidentally, it's easy to remember because it's this current year. But first, let's say that the reason for this request is that people in the free countries overseas have a great interest in learning about the American people and American culture. Recently, they've been able to read about America in English language books published in the Soviet Union and containing the Soviet line on America. These books, distributed by the Russians, are available overseas for less than the cost of publication and are thus receiving wide readership. If we wish to counter the effect of such books, we must send our own books to these people. Hence the request. Send your books, we repeat the address, to Books from America, Box 1960,